This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two rolling along this morning. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is the Monday edition. We try to get your week going right. We've been talking NBA basketball, of course, because we had two really good game fours as the Phoenix Suns beat the Denver Nuggets last night in a game that went back and forth, saw outstanding offense, outstanding efficiency. Devin Booker, 36 points on 78% shooting from the floor. Kevin Durant also pitched in 36 points to go along with 11 rebounds. Nikola Jokic, he had 53 points, 11 assists for the big man. He was shooting 67% from the floor. Landry Shamet was the man of the hour for Phoenix, though. When Monty Williams needed somebody to chip in, here was a guy on his fourth NBA team knocking down threes, and anytime Denver would make a run or get the lead or whatever, Shamet was there to make a bucket. He was extremely important, getting 19 points in the Suns' victory. Without him, they'd be down 3-1 and going to Denver facing elimination. But instead, that series is now 2-2, and the two wins have come when most thought the doom and gloom cloud was on this team heading back to Arizona without Chris Paul. He was that important, but the strain groin muscle had made us think, well, where are you going to get your bench points? Where are you going to get somebody to come in and chip in? Is it going to be Terrence Ross? I mean, who's it going to be? Is Cameron Payne stepping up? Where is it going to be, right? The only other person opportunity for the Phoenix Suns was to go with a guy named Landry Shamet, who is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. All right, so I want to get to more on the Sixers game for a second, because I thought I love the story with James Harden, though. I will tell you, I'm not a huge James Harden fan, but I like him. He's never been on a team I've rooted for. He's never been part of my sort of, you know, he's not been someone that I've been actively like praying that he does well. But his story is rather interesting. All from the time when he was in Oklahoma City to the time in Houston, where he just didn't have a quite good enough team in Houston, despite being, you know, surrounding themselves with tremendous talent, they were not quite good enough. They were a Chris Paul injury away, remember, from beating Golden State in the playoffs. But then he goes to Brooklyn. He tries to make what they think is going to be this tri-star sort of team, right? James Harden is being added to a team with Durant and Kyrie Irving. But he really gets sick of that, and he goes to Philadelphia. And he's had good games in Philadelphia, and he's had not very good games in Philadelphia. But in this case, they have needed him in this series against the Celtics in a way that has sort of made us really recognize how truly incredible he can be at times. Now, I want to go to the end of the game, because he had that shooting victim from Michigan State. Did you catch this at the end where he was in a wheelchair? They brought him in. He signed the shoes, talked about his good luck charm. That was a really incredible moment. It's a real special moment. But don't take for the fact that this is how Philadelphia is going to win their series against Boston. It is going to be with James Harden and his shooting. I think the Celtics have an answer for Joel Embiid. I think there is a way that they can either contain Joel Embiid or affect the play around him that makes him, even if he goes off and has a great game, it nullifies the overall effect. The Celtics still have a little bit of control in this series. They've made some decisions in this game, as I was talking about in hour one. There have been made some decisions in this game that make you feel like Joe Mazzulla, the team, could feel like, all right, you know what, let's fix this or that. That was a little ridiculous. Jaylen Brown, for example, got called for a foul in the early part of the game, and that really shifted the defensive angle of Mazzulla when it came to Harden. I think they ended up going more PJ Tucker or whatnot, but it changed the way that was affected. If Mazzulla and the Celtics can figure out some of the mistakes they made, I think they're controlling this series. But if Harden continues to pour in 45 points, 42 points, 43 points, whatever it is, Philadelphia's got a very good chance of stealing game five away from the Celtics, like we saw in game one. Again, a series is always about adjustments. It's always about what you're doing, who comes up, who steps up. Like we just talked about in the Phoenix series, where we were wondering who is it going to be, throwing some darts on a board to see who Monty Williams is going to have to rely on for minutes in production. And, you know, like in game four and even in game three, it lands on a couple of guys that you did not expect. So in Philadelphia's case, that's not the case. It's going to be Harden. And whether Mazzulla spends a lot of his defensive energy on Harden, but then keeping Embiid in check in some way, shape, or form the best way you can, that's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be really interesting to see. That's why Game 4 is so important. I can't stress this enough. I don't know why. I think this argument is dead. Like, people talk about how important a Game 3 is, how important Game 5 is. How in the world is Game 4 not the most important game of a 7-game series? How is it not? The series is either going to be over, you're going to be down 3-1, or we now have a best 2 out of 3.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Like, you mean to tell me Game 5 in Denver for the Phoenix Suns is more important than their game last night?
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think outside of a Game 7, because obviously
Game 7 is the most important, but in terms of getting there.
But yeah, Game 4 is the telltale sign of where the series is going.
Right. I just, look, Game 4 is either a team under elimination, or a chance to tie up the series.
Yeah, because right now, it's a reset.
Right.
Now, I mean, with the Suns and Nuggets, doesn't matter. I mean, now it's back to square one, 0-0,
best of three wins, just like the good old days, way back in the good old days, back in the 70s when we didn't want to play a lot of playoff basketball. Seriously, it's awesome to when you have a Game 4 setting and you've evened up the series at 2. That emotional feeling, Philadelphia, whether Suns last night, it could happen to Golden State tonight. It could happen to the Knicks tonight, where you've whatever mistakes that you've made, however you've got blown out, however you've blown out them, irrelevant. All of it's a wash. Lock it done. Wrap it up. Now it's best 2 out of 3. Let's go play. Last night was way more important to Phoenix than unless Game 5 is the elimination game, right? Well, which it would have been, but you can't tell me right now that Game 5 today in a 2-2 game, even though it would take home court advantage, is more important than basically staying alive in a play. They're down 1-3. They're absolutely done.
Right, but I'll say this. Even if Game 5 is an elimination game, I still say Game 4 is more important because that was your opportunity.
Your opportunity. So
and now you're facing elimination. I'm hoping the Lakers get there.
Listen,
they go up 3-1 after tonight. Game 5, I still don't say Game 5 is more important than Game 4 because now it's 3-1. Now the Lakers are almost in a position where they can kind of relax and go, well, we got a couple chances at this.
What was great about watching that game last night was I was watching two teams where I went, somebody is going to waste an effort.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is going to waste. Nikola Jokic or Durant and Booker are going to be wasting an effort. Like, it wasn't good enough. To watch Durant and Booker shoot to that efficiency, right? To shoot to, well, at least for Booker, 78% from the floor. Durant was 57, still good, but not 78%.
See, here's the thing. Like, with Durant, he looks awkward right now.
Yeah.
I almost feel like he's still trying to get into the whole rhythm, like not only just with the Suns, but the rhythm just of himself because so much time off.
He had 13 free throws last night. That's great. Phoenix could continue to use that. That's fantastic that he can still get to the line. He made some killer threes, but I kind of agree. I think it was more the Devin Booker show just because you're just kind of like. I hate to kind of compare it. It was because it's team versus player, but it was like. In 85, Villanova didn't look like they were going to miss, and they shot 70-something percent. That's the way you feel about when a guy's shooting 70-plus percent is Booker. It's like everything you throw up lands in the basket. I mean, it's just, it's very video. Like, I posted on Twitter last night, and I said, these guys are right. It's like watching a video game with Devin Booker. And somebody said, but Jokic has got more points. That's not the point. The point is how efficient he was. He was efficient in a way that we don't see very often in a game where everything you put up finds its way to the bottom of the net. But I thought to myself, boy, if Denver squeezes this game out with Jokic putting up 60 or whatever, wherever at that point he was heading, I was like, my God, you just came at this Nuggets team with everything gunning except Chris Paul, and Jokic found a way to beat you. That's why when Phoenix was pulling away late, I was like, man, this is better for this series that these two guys stepped up, and now we've got a series that's 2-2. Now we've got a real series at 2-2. And as I said in hour one, I hope Jokic is not suspended. I whether you're a diehard Nuggets fan or a diehard Suns fan, I hope you can see through the lens of where I'm coming from. I know you'd want an advantageous situation if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, and I think if you're a Nuggets fan, you think that it's absolutely nothing. I don't think it's nothing, but I don't think he should be suspended. Like, there's something in the middle, right? I don't think he knew he was the owner at that particular moment. I think he just went for the basketball and didn't care who it was.
I don't think he should be suspended. I'm going to throw this out at you, too. Did the owner flop a little bit?
Oh, I think he did, yeah. I think he did. Why not sell it a little bit?
I believe this. Owner knew exactly who Jokic was. Sure. I don't know if Jokic really recognized, oh, that's the Suns owner.
But can I ask, you know what? Let me retract that for a second. He probably did. But if you don't expect to get hit, you tend to fall down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a little bit of acting in
okay,
it. But hold on. When we talk about soccer players flopping and we talk about basketball players flopping, it's because they're in an environment where they know contact is coming, right?
Yeah, of course.
LeBron is anticipating contact, so when he gets it, he knows what to do. A soccer player is anticipating contact, so he knows what to do. If you're standing there, the guy's wrestling the ball away from you, and eight, nine, ten players pushes you with his forearm, you might get caught off guard enough to lose your balance and fall backwards. But I do think he sold it well. I will say I think he sold it well. He's a former walk-on at Michigan State. He probably could have held his own even if he was surprised. But I think he sold it perfectly. Good, the bad, and the dumb next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb Monday edition. We give you the good, the bad, and the dumb from the weekend to set your week right. What is the good of the day?
You know what happens when you miss a day?
What?
You're inundated with good.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many good stories that I found. And then, you know, I even had a listener send me a story.
Really?
Yeah. Listener Philip sent me a story. So you know what? I'll honor Philip real quick.
Okay.
And because he said, you know, this isn't the good of the day. I think he threatened to sue us. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I didn't read the whole tweet that he sent me. But I'll bring this up for him. Was Build-A-Bear stepped up big time because a 4-year-old child lost a rainbow sparkle bear.
Oh, okay.
And you know, with Build-A-Bear, you can put sounds into.
I like the way you say, as you know.
Been to Build-A-Bear. Don't deny
My wife has been to Build-A-Bear.
You've stood outside holding the bag.
My wife's been to Build-A-Bear, but I've never seen the actual building of a bear in a Build-A-Bear.
Oh, that's fun. You should go Build-A-Bear sometime.
I got no more little kids anymore.
No, I'm saying for you.
Oh, for me, I should get my own?
Yeah, why not?
All right, why not?
But anyways, one of the things you can do is you can put sound inside the bear, right?
Oh, you can.
And,
okay.
You know, you can make like a back, if whatever, when Star Wars was popular, you can make like a Chewbacca bear, a bear that kind of looked like Chewbacca, and you push the little button that was on the inside and it roared or howled like Chewbacca. One of the things they have been doing now is that you can customize the sounds, and inside this one bear was his late mother's heartbeat.
Oh, okay.
So he had lost that bear, but fortunately for Build-A-Bear, they still had the audio recording of that sound.
No kidding.
So they were able to make this child a new bear, and did it for free. It was still on their files. I don't think they keep them forever, but it was just long enough that they, you know, was still there, and they're like, here, you know, here's a new bear with your mother's heartbeat.
All right, can I? I don't mean to be the Grinch Scrooge of this
story.
Oh,
you can. I know where you're going with this.
Well, maybe. I hope you do. Why didn't the family have a copy of the heartbeat?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right? Like, why did they have to rely on Build-A-Bear's storage?
I thought you were going another way.
Oh, okay.
Of, you know, are we, you know, is it 100% certain that this was the mother's
heart?
Oh,
yeah. That was good. Yeah. But I'm like, why don't you have that?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. They should.
We deleted it off our file thinking we never needed it again.
Yep.
But that's really cool. That is good. Good for Build-A-Bear.
So I do have another good. I actually have two more goods, but I'm going to save one of them for tomorrow because, you know, we can have some fun with it. But this one I have to talk about now before, while it's still fresh in our mind.
Right.
And that was the coronation that occurred Saturday morning.
Yeah. I watched a little, done a little bit
Did
of
you?
It. My wife turned it on Saturday while I was making breakfast.
Okay.
So I was making breakfast for my wife and daughter, and she had it on.
See, I caught it late. I caught it after the king had already been crowned.
And started at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to a point, or I made it to a point where they started interviewing some of the guests. And I literally watched about 15, 20 minutes of it, and this one guest appeared. And I don't know why I found this so fascinating, but I do. The guest's name is Francis DeMoke. I don't know if I'm saying that last name correctly.
Right.
But he is the King's Champion. And the King's Champion role is all he's doing is he's carrying a flag that on this flag are the nations that the royal family reigns over. Right?
Okay.
Nothing out of the ordinary. But what I found fascinating with this guy is that his family has been doing it for 35 generations.
What?
So I don't know how many. Wow. I'm not going to say all the greats, great-grandfathers.
That's got to be 1,000 years, right? Am I doing the math correct?
His great
700 years, if it's 20 years?
His great-grandfather with a lot of greats in front of it. Was the flag bearer or was the king's champion for William the Conqueror, who reigned shortly after the Battle of Hastings in 1066.
Jeez Louise.
His father was the king's champion for Queen Elizabeth. I guess the queen's champion for Queen Elizabeth.
The family just never moved to Italy or the United States.
Oh my God. It's amazing to me that it's been this one family has been the king's champion since 1066.
So my big observation was this. So I love history. So I read historical books and whatnot. So I know that if you go back in time 500 years ago, just a random time, that the coronation of the king, that was a major deal. We are protected. This is our guy. He's protecting us. The royalty will continue. They took it seriously. A sign from God. This was God bestowing a leader. When I saw Charles in his stuff, crown, cape, scepter.
Yeah.
He looked silly.
He did.
He looked silly. He looked like he was in a costume. It looked stupid.
Well,
and maybe I'm saying that as an American and we don't believe in that. And maybe there are still people in England who they believe in the monarchy and they believe in the divine coronation of God to king. Maybe they still believe in that. But 500 years ago, people would have wept. I looked at him and he looks like a circus clown. This looks dumb.
I was watching videos on TikTok or Twitter, and there was one guy who was passing out beers. At the coronation.
Nice. That's
Somebody
great.
Was interviewing. He's like, oh, you got to have a couple of cold ones through the coronation. You want one?
Yeah, why not?
He turned to the reporter. Was like, hey, you want a beer?
Sure.
That's what it's become, right?
It really is.
It was really just a festival. I was shocked to see that there were soccer games going on. I thought they were all going to be canceled or postponed.
I thought so, too.
I mean, they postponed them from when the queen died. But not when the king's being coronated.
It just looked silly.
It did. You know what else it looked? He looked really small.
Yeah, he
did. He looked really, didn't look kingly.
I know we're going long on this, so we're going to have to keep the bad number. I want to acknowledge, though, it's the last time I'm talking coronation, so I wanted to get this in. Because I looked up, I did hear a guy, they had a panel on one of the shows. I think my wife had it on CNN, so I want to give it credit. So they had this British panel, and they were all talking about it. And there was one guy that made a point, and it was such a good point that I rewound it to listen to it again. And that was, you got to give the man credit. It took him 75 years, but he got exactly what he wanted out of it. He had had an affair with that woman since in his 20s.
Yeah.
She was married to another man, and they had an affair, and he always envisioned a day where they would be king and queen of that country, which he, to him, it must have been like, it's going to take a lot. I got a lot of obstacles overcome because they want me to marry this teenager. She's pretty, but that's not who I love. I love this woman. She's married. Now I'm going to be married, but someday the two of us are going to be king and queen of this country. It took until he was an old man, but he got exactly what he wanted out of it.
And it'll probably be a short reign.
Sure, right. It probably won't be long, but he got what he wanted. He finally became queen. He married that woman that he loved. Because people were saying that Diana, this is her day. She should have been the queen. That it should have been a long marriage that never broke up. She would have never been in that car with that other guy if they had never got divorced. Should have been her up there, but he got what he wanted. So in that, I raise a glass. Props, man. Props.
Yeah.
You never gave up on the dream, man. You never gave up on the dream.
And it is amazing. I was trying
to. You and Camilla now are royalty.
One of my sons came down. He was asking about it. I was like, so, you know, they just, were they elected? I mean, he didn't quite understand. I was like, no, they're just born into it. And, you know, there was like, they showed a quick picture of Harry, who was pretty much absent through the entire thing. And they're like, so he'll be king next? And I was like, no. I said, honestly, it's his older brother. And then if dad dies and older brother dies, it goes to the son.
Yeah, you get screwed.
Not to the second born kid. He would have to go and murder that entire side of the family, which they did back in
the
day.
Which they did. Yeah, which they did.
They did back in the day. But, I mean, now, you know, I guess that'd be frowned upon, even though it's the royal history.
So, again, maybe it's the red, white, and blue in me, but he just looked dumb. He just looked stupid. He didn't look royal or prestigious.
He looked
kind of silly. It looked kind of...
It was almost like that cloak needed to be taken in a little bit.
It just looked ridiculous.
The crown resized. I mean, you know, it was just...
But,
yeah,
I'm with you. It didn't have the same feeling amongst the...
Nah.
We don't dig coronations. We elect presidents and we kind of follow them, but we don't crown kings.
I mean, you know, and I still, I'm not, you know, my kids ask me a good question. It's like, well, what does he do? And I'm like, I don't really know.
He does something, but I don't think he does.
I mean,
a lot.
I think they have a voice in parliament, but they don't have a deciding
voice. Hey, there was that soccer match where the crowd was chanting, you can shove the coronation up your, right? They were chanting that. That was kind of neat. So, anyway, we'll get the bad and the dumb from the weekend coming up, and then more on the, again, great games from the NBA. What do we expect tonight in the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors, which has not really gone the way people thought it would? We'll talk about that coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb this morning here on Wake Up Call. So let's get to the bad of the day.
The bad of the day. Tony, you've been in this position. You've waited your whole entire life to buy a home.
Right.
And you finally buy a home. And you're settling in, and it's great. And you're outside walking your dog around, but your dog keeps, like, you know, going off to this one part of the house. And just like sniffing and freaking out and always concerned, right?
Right.
So for this one homeowner in Colorado, she discovered that this dog would go over there and there were these two holes in the wall.
Uh-oh.
And she saw a snake in there.
Uh-oh.
And she saw another snake.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So long story short, it turns out that she had snakes living in her walls.
Oh, no. All around her walls?
And that some of them had been in there for at least 2 years. I don't know why.
How do you fix
that
problem?
That didn't pop up in the home. I don't know. She had to call a guy who came in, and he found up to 10 snakes living inside her walls.
So how do they determine that there's not... Without taking the house down, how do they determine that the house is snake clear?
I have no idea. I got maybe sonar.
They lure it, or you know.
I wouldn't.
I'd move. I'd be like,
burn it down.
Are you kidding?
I mean, the great thing about it is that none of them were poisonous.
Oh, okay.
So they're
friendly, lovable.
There's the positive. But, yeah, I don't know how big the snakes were. I mean, I wouldn't want to find out. But he said some of them, because of their size, that's how you can tell. They've been in there for 2 years.
I would find faulty electrical wiring and be like, I don't know what happened. House just blew up. I don't know what happened.
Fortunately, I had moved out all my stuff first.
And I say that, and I know them. I have friends who love snakes. They keep them as pets. They love them. They buy the frozen rats and feed them. And I say that as a guy who doesn't really like them. I'm not afraid of them, but I don't want them around. I don't want them in my walls.
No, I couldn't imagine.
No, thank you.
I mean,
oh boy,
have snake. I mean, have that many snakes up to
what's it feeding off of? What do they eat?
I guess. Spiders,
whatever,
or,
little insects are in the house just normally.
Yeah, or maybe
I always wondered that with Indiana Jones. Do they just eat themselves? Remember in Indiana Jones, they open up that tomb and there's a bunch of snakes and they throw them down in the pit.
They probably eat each other.
They must eat each other because it was like, what are they eating off of? There's nothing in there. They're not feeding them on a regular basis. It was opened up for the first time in hundreds of years.
But like this, I mean, you know, because they had been in there for 2 years. How did the inspection not find that? I guess you probably aren't looking forward to thinking about it. I mean, you're sitting in this room right now, or you're sitting in your room right now. Could there be a snake in the wall? I don't want you to have to burn down your house.
I don't want to know. I want to be ignorant of that fact. If there's a snake in my wall, I don't want to know. If I knew, it would just alter the way I thought of everything. First of all, I would have a big decision to make. Like, let's say a guy came to my house. He's like, hey, man, I found a snake in your wall. Would I tell my wife? Because if I told my wife, we're moving to Montana.
Well, there'd be more snakes there.
Well, whatever. We'd be moving somewhere.
Fine. You got to guess. Move to the city.
I'm just picking a state off the top of my head. She'd be like, we're out. We're out of here. Bye. Like, I would just keep it quiet. Like,
and then the question does become, do you burn the house down with your possessions in there?
Yeah. You just, starting fresh. I'm going to live in a van.
Yeah, but do you remove, like, the sentimental things? Like, you know, the irreplaceable things? Like, well, I was moving it to storage anyways.
Right.
And how long do you wait until after you've moved said things to a storage unit? Do you wait a month, couple of months before you burn it down?
Yeah, that's a good question. These are all on the table.
Yeah, I need to know.
Yeah. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. Have you ever heard of a town called Old Bridge, New Jersey?
No.
I guess it's, you know, people will say it's northern New Jersey, but I think it's more central New Jersey.
Okay.
Not 100% sure where New Jersey it is, and that's not really what's important. But what is important is that a congressional candidate was walking in the area. And, you know, one of the things that she kept hearing about, you know, Old Bridge, New Jersey, which is her district that she was running for, is that, you know, there's been a lot of, like, dumping by the streams. You know, construction people are just dumping their waste there.
Right.
And so, you know, and everyone just kind of ignores that this has been going on. So she went to go investigate it, but she didn't find any construction vehicles. No, Tony, which are construction equipment and product and stuff. What she found was 500 pounds of pasta.
500 pounds of pasta?
500 pounds of spaghetti.
That's what people were dumping?
That's what one person was dumping.
So was it a restaurant?
Well, it turns out what it was, everyone thought it was a restaurant. 500 pounds, that's a lot of pasta.
It's a lot, right.
But what it turns out was that a retired veteran was cleaning out his parents' house, getting ready for it to be sold.
Right.
I think one parent died and the other one moved into a home. So he was cleaning out the house and... What his guesstimate was that during COVID, they just stockpiled jars of marinara sauce and cooked a lot of pasta.
Oh, okay. And then, okay. So they were very nervous. So they said, this is an easy thing to make. Let's do that. Okay.
But 500 pounds of
pasta. That's crazy.
I can't even imagine. Just walking through the woods one day and you see 500 pounds. I mean, it's just these tiny little piles. I mean, they're huge piles.
That's like a different level of hoarding, don't you think?
Yeah. God. I mean, do you keep it in Ziploc bags? How does it keep? I mean, I've had pasta.
Are you cooking it like halfway through and then you finish it in the pot, like they do in restaurants?
I mean, maybe that's it because that'll save better, right?
Right. You just
but 500
cook
pounds.
It halfway, you put it in a bag, and then you just take it out and you just dump it in boiling water. So you don't, you're not cooking it from the dry part.
Right.
You're cooking it from straight.
And that way it cooks much faster. You can get
much
the product
faster.
Out there.
That's
because,
what they do
in restaurants. I've tried to save cooked pasta before, but after a few days, the green fuzz starts to
way
grow
earlier
on it.
Than I al dente.
Yeah.
My little Gordon Ramsay pasta advice. Wow. Good old, well, Old Bridge. 500 pounds
bridge,
of pasta.
500 pounds of pasta.
Wow, that's crazy.
And it looks edible. I mean, I'm looking at it, you know, you see the photos of it. It's like, okay, well, you know, there's nothing growing on it.
Yeah, no, no.
I mean, it looks like you can, I mean, so I'm thinking, yeah, they did that. But still, that's, I don't know. Maybe
well,
they were just
go.
Bored and every single day during COVID since they were locked in. Like, well, let's just keep making more pasta.
The good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Monday. I got one more dumb for you. So yesterday was the Miami Grand Prix.
Yep.
And the United States likes to do things big and bold. So they did a driver introduction where they used Will.i.am and LL Cool J.
Okay.
As they were introducing the drivers. And so they were also in cross promotion with Fast and Furious, the new Fast and Furious movie.
Are they both in it?
I don't know. I don't know. But Will.i.am had an orchestra that was playing his songs. I mean, an orchestra. And then the LL Cool J was introducing the drivers. Anyway, it was a big deal. Like they got to come out of a tunnel. Crowd would go crazy. They did it like a boxing kind of thing. They were talking about each driver. And then most of the drivers decided to complain about it because they didn't want to be in the hot sun in their driver outfits while it was baking and having to stand there. And I'm like, you know what? It's LL Cool J that's giving you an introduction. I know you're glamorous race car drivers, but how often can you say LL Cool J is introducing you to a crowd?
But
chill. It's just relax. It's fine. And there's Will.i.am. He's helping out in the driver intro.
You know the first thought that comes to my mind?
Yeah.
Does someone like Max Verstappen even really know who LL Cool J is?
That's a good question. They're all young. They're all like 20-something year old. There's a couple of older guys, but they're all like young. They probably don't even know who they are.
I mean, my kids couldn't name an LL Cool J song.
That's a good point.
That might
have been more like me going, hey, if LL Cool J ever introduced me for Radio Row, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? Is that because I'm more familiar with his work? Yeah,
but
they probably are like,
I don't
even know.
You know, what if it was like the drummer of Bread?
Right, right. That's true. Yeah. Right. That's a great point. If it's the drummer, you're right.
Name an actor or whatever. Someone famous back in the
60s. If the bass player for the Animals was like, I would be like, okay, I guess that's a big deal. I guess that's cool. Old people like this.
Or if it's a star that's in Europe.
Yeah. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's the case.
It's a big star in England, like, you know, one of the guys who does the talk show host or something like that, like in the mornings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, this is a big deal. This is an honor. And you're like, okay.
They got a little bit of bad news this weekend at that race. That race did not sell out. You could buy tickets right up until start time. There was a little bit of a problem with that.
That's incredible.
That was the hottest ticket in sports last year. That was the big ticket. It was a big
is it
new
because
thing.
Where
people
it's held?
Loved it. It's hot down there, man. Where Miami Gardens, where the track, where the football stadium is, probably.
Yeah,
it's not a glamorous place.
They can't find any place around South Beach.
That's what I'm thinking.
Along the water.
It's not. You know, stadiums. They're not in the ritzy part of the area.
No,
where
they're
the land
not.
Is cheaper, and so it's not. It's not. It's like. You go about 20 minutes into the state of Florida. It's not on the beach.
I would picture Miami to be looking more like Monaco.
Me too. That's what I was thinking when they first announced it.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue in his Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So tonight, two basketball games as the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat have game four down in South Florida. And then the Golden State Warriors will try to stay alive in their big game four against the Lakers in a series where it's been massive double-digit victories, Golden State in game two, and then the Lakers in game three. So there's been no rhythm to that series whatsoever. There's been no real feeling like one team's got it over on the other team. They played a pretty close game in game one, And then after that, it's been blowouts. Blowouts where you bench everybody and you go, all right, everybody take a day. Everybody take this quarter off. We ain't getting back into this one. But Miami got Jimmy Butler back. He had like 26 points for the Heat in game three as they beat the Knicks pretty handedly. They held the Knicks to less than 90 points, and they've got game four tonight. What, I mean, let's stop and pause for a second on this. What if the Miami Heat are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals and Jimmy Butler is fine? They got as good a chance as.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't, you know, you would not go, oh, well, against the Celtics. No. Sixers. No. You wouldn't say that about either one.
No, I mean, the Sixers are down to really just one guy unless Embiid, you know, can get 100% healthy or get some time off or something like that, which doesn't seem to happen because that series looks like it's going to go seven. The Celtics really haven't been looking that great.
Yeah, no, they have not. They've not.
They haven't looked that dominant force that we saw early on or towards the end of the season. Why can't the Heat win it?
It goes to show you, man, Eric Spoelstra, right man at the right moment, and it was really brilliant on Pat Riley to understand who he was very early in his career and what he was giving him in the Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh trio.
Yeah, because it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to be fired.
Right, exactly. They were going to bust that all up and, you know. But yeah, for
LeBron's
going to
be bringing his own man.
Yeah, and they not only has he stayed with it, he has he keeps getting the most out of his teams when you and think he's not getting a lot out of them.
Longest tenured coach outside of Popovich?
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah.
I think you're right. He is. Right? I mean, much longer than many people thought he would having that job.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? I mean, this guy was, when he was a kid, practically, he was just a videotape guy. That's all he was. Just cutting up videotape and just giving it to the coaches and worked his way into a position. Now he's running the show. And not only he's running the show, he's one of the best coaches in the league.
Yeah.
He strategizes better. He will out-coach you. He out-coached Mike Budenholzer, who lost his job on Thursday.
And which is amazing. I mean, I'm looking down this list of longest tenured coaches, right? And I'll just go over the top five, right? Greg Popovich, but we know he's on his way out soon, right?
Right.
But I love what these other coaches have in common. Okay, Eric Spoelstra, he's been there since 2008. Steve Kerr is next in line, 2014. Mike Malone, or Mike Cole Malone, I should say.
Right.
With the Nuggets, and Mike Budenholzer, who just let go. But those top five, what are those top, outside of Popovich, you know, those four guys are all in the playoffs year after year after
year. Right. That's right.
It's, you know, something like to say, like, you maybe keep them there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point about Spoelstra. I mean, we do remember that. When that trio came together, they're like, there's no way they're going to let Eric Spoelstra run this, right?
Oh, I remember the narrative was like, oh, we'll give him a season.
Right, give him a season.
Give him a season, yeah. See what happens, but then
they lost the finals in that first year, and you're like, that's it. Thanks for playing. Thanks for playing the game called NBA Coach. Done.
Don't worry, you'll find a job somewhere
else. Don't worry,
else.
You'll be okay. You'll land on your feet. Don't worry about it.
But LeBron needs to bring in his yes man.
Yeah, of course. That was, God, I remember that like it was yesterday. That big, huge conversation. The whole country was all like, yeah, I didn't win one, LeBron. Boo, ha ha. And everyone was wondering, yeah, how long is Spoelstra going? Do you want to be on the other end of his cell phone? Like, he's probably checking his cell phone every second. Going, they're going to call me any minute.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right? I mean, you look at it just recently. I mean, like you said, Budenholzer was let go over the weekend.
Right. And for not living up to the expectation of having Giannis in the number one seed in the East.
Right. But didn't they win it just recently?
Yeah. They won it in 2021.
Yep, I'm sorry.
And they, that's the toughest part about being an NBA head coach, right? Like, we look at this all opening for the Milwaukee Bucks as a great opportunity for somebody. Of course, if you're some Nick Nurse, for example, you'd want that job. Mm-hmm. But it also comes with, but you're not going to get a long-term deal here. Like, you're not going to be here 20 years if you don't win. If we just kicked the guy out that had a championship 10 seconds ago,
yep.
And we found a way to get rid of him. So we will do the same.
And why? Because, you know, his main star was hurt, too.
Yeah, main star was hurt. But, again, that there was...
Can't lose to...
Can't lose to Miami.
Yep.
You can't lose to an 8 seed. And, you know, yeah, he made some mistakes, but still, Giannis was out, played 11 minutes in game one, out game two and three, and wasn't really the same after that.
I mean, it just.
And they still kicked him. I said this on Friday when you were out. I was like, does Giannis still think the season was just a stepping stone to success? Because the guy lost his job for it.
Yeah.
Like
it's
I know.
Not a failure. For one, it is.
I think the core of that, because I saw that brought up over the weekend too. Like people were talking about Giannis's comments and Mike Budenholzer getting fired. I think the core of that argument was the definition of failure. I think at the end it was an understanding of what the term really means. What does Giannis think it means? What did the reporter think it means? What does the team think it means? Because and the connotation that's around it. People don't want to say the word. People don't want to admit the word. But you know who loves to talk about it all the time? You know who loves to talk about failures? Rich, successful people. They love talking about failure because they love talking about their own. They love – you get a Mark Cuban. You get anybody that's ever become – you know, anybody who became a billionaire almost overnight, right? What do they talk about? Oh, I was sleeping on a friend's couch. Oh, I tried this business and it failed. Oh, I did this and it failed. I had $2 to my name when I was 26. Like, they love discussing it because it makes their story bigger. That makes their success bigger. And they never have to worry about it anymore. They're not – it. Once you reach a point of financial success, you can't get rid of your money. That's it. Like, Mark Cuban is never going to be broke ever, ever, ever. He's never going to lose $3 billion. So he never has to worry about failure because the failure is different. The definition of the word is felt it is different to him. If he backs me on I'm bringing back buggy whips, right? Good old buggy whips, because we all are going back to buggies soon. And he's like, that's a brilliant idea. I'm going to back you. And it fails. He goes, yeah, it failed. But he doesn't worry about losing his fortune, right? He just goes, yeah, well, that didn't work. Failure in this case, Giannis doesn't see it as a failure because he sees it as, no, there's a big picture here. It's hard to win a championship. I'm in the battle every night. I know how talented these teams are. You know, I get it. But in Budenholzer, it had to have been because they called him up about a week later and said, you're out of a job. Thanks. Thanks for the 50-year drought. Thanks for breaking the 50-year drought and bringing the city a championship. But that's not enough currency for you to lose to an 8 seed in the first round of the playoffs when you had 58 wins. Like, it's just not. We don't care how hard it is to win a title and Jimmy Butler and playoff Jimmy and Giannis was hurt. It's too bad. We're looking for somebody else. So it's about the definition. It's about the way you categorize it and put it in. And people shouldn't be scared to say they failed or they didn't succeed. It's part of life. I mean, Lord knows every one of us has got a story, whether it's professionally or personally or whatever. Maybe you had a marriage that didn't work out. Maybe you had a job that didn't work out. But just because you found success in something else, maybe you married twice and the second marriage was the one that stuck. Or maybe you went to work for Company A and Company A was a bad work environment and because of that, you found Company B, and now you've been there for 20 years. It doesn't mean that that's a stepping stone to success. It still didn't work out. Use the verbiage you want, but it's still not successful. So whatever the term is you want to use for not successful, call it a failure, call it not successful, call it stepping stone to success. I don't care. But those all three should equal about the same thing, which is this is not something to blow over. Losing in the first round of the playoffs is not something that you just go, it's okay. We're all learning here, aren't we? The business required that team get further than it did, and the guy that somebody had to pay. I think you and I were saying that at when they were done. So somebody's got to pay for this. This is Mike Budenholzer is probably going to go down for this.
Yeah.
Right. You just do not let number one seed lose to an 8 seed in 5 games. That's not a 7 game series, and they call it a lucky break.
And I don't know if I'm unrealistic or just too sentimental. It's like I feel bad because you sit back and go, okay, well, you didn't have all your components.
Yeah, you didn't have everything that was working for you.
But
in
at the same
games.
Time, I guess, do we live in a world now where it's like, well, you know, that team should have won. It can't all be dependent on just one superstar.
It's possible that the game two hurt him the most, which is they dominated Miami without Giannis. And now the ownership group went, well, why couldn't you replicate what we just saw in game two down in South Florida for game three? Why couldn't, game four when he came back, why couldn't you still
I almost feel like Steve Kerr could get fired because they weren't able to win on the road this year.
Yes, exactly. Coming up in Hour 3, Jerry Duman's going to talk NBA. And again, we're continuing to buzz about last night's and yesterday's two Game 4s.